Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have an important show and a special guest. I was speaking to him before we started, and I think there's a lot of privacy issues that we don't speak about. People give their information daily, whether that's on Facebook, any kind of social media account. And I think we need to become a lot more mindful. The most recent example is 23andMe having a quote unquote data breach. And then they actually blamed people for giving their information. I thought that was really ironic. So I wanted to have somebody to come on to speak about privacy. And we're going to speak with Mr. Gabriel Custodiet. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Well, I don't know how they pronounced it 2,000 years ago, but I usually say Custodiet.
Okay, got you. Custodiet. He's the host of the Watchman Privacy Podcast and the author of books on privacy and Bitcoin. His work investigates freedom and secrecy techniques, as well as individualist philosophy and minimalism. He has been living a pure privacy lifestyle for the last several years, and all of his information can be found on watchmanprivacy.com. Thank you so much for joining me today, because our conversation is going to be really important in opening people's minds and eyes to how they can protect themselves. I mean, from a doctor perspective, we're individualized in our DNA, but on the society perspective, we're individualized by what makes us our privacy, you know, how we interact with each other. And that to me should be sacrosanct, just like the doctor-patient relationship, frankly. So let's start from the beginning. How did you start thinking about this and looking at this and changing how you interacted with the world?
Yeah, I'd say that I got interested in privacy when I started thinking, let's say, skeptically about the world, and started reading history and started understanding some of the bigger problems and the people who, let's say, we all know have control over aspects of our lives. And for me, privacy was an aspect, a protection from all that, that was not being appreciated enough. And so I had always wanted to start something where I could have an independent income. And so I started my show, the Watchman Privacy Podcast. I wrote a book just talking people through how to protect themselves digitally and in person. And as I went along the way, it just became obvious that this was even more important than I thought. And so sometimes I really go down the rabbit hole. I said, you said in your introduction, I live a full privacy lifestyle, which means I don't have a phone. I don't have any connection to my house, to my name. So I go really far down the rabbit hole, but I'm always happy to talk the basics for people just getting into this stuff. And so, yeah, to me, it just seems obvious. Of course, we want to protect our private self, our private details. I know many, many people having gone down this rabbit hole who can very much use your private data to exploit you in all kinds of ways. So for me, it's just a very obvious thing. And I'm not here to convince people that they need privacy. I think that's a losing battle. But for the people who get it, and you should get it, I have all the time in the world.
Well, that's wonderful. So let's look at the bigger picture, you know, like the 1,000-foot view. You know, a lot of people will say, well, I have nothing to hide. And I don't care who knows about me, government or private, you know, other people like on Facebook and these sorts of things. What are they? And it's a big, huge question, but why should they care? I mean, what could happen to us by getting our information out there? And we're going to drill down, but I mean the biggest picture that you can come up with. Why is it so toxic to do that?
Yeah, and I don't think you'll like my answer here, Dr. George, but one thing I've discovered recently is that I don't proselytize privacy anymore, right? I like talking to the people who get it. And so if you don't get it, right, if you don't get that we have a $10 trillion cybercrime industry that profits from all the information that you give out to send you phishing emails and things of this sort, if you don't understand how swatting exists, where basically people are upset with you online and they find out you're an address, your address through one of the many people search websites that exist, especially for Americans, and they call in a hostage situation to SWAT, and the SWAT comes busting into that house and sometimes kill people. Then if you don't understand, you know, how privacy matters, when you learn about that stuff, I don't know what to tell you. If you live in one of around 10 Muslim countries where you can be punished by death for being gay, and you use social media like Facebook or Instagram, which can out you in a sophisticated way in about three actions, right? Just a handful of user actions. I don't know what to say. If you're using Microsoft products like Skype, like Xbox Live, even Windows 10 or Office 365, as it's called now, and you don't understand how Microsoft's service agreement can kick you out of your own computer if you have hate speech in your language, and that's exactly from the Microsoft service agreement, then, you just don't get it. And, you know, one thing that I have kind of red-pilled myself on recently is I cannot change people's mind about something. It's something that they have to do. They have to take that journey and they have to make the step from zero to one. And so I talk to the people who do get it. And I've kind of just stopped proselytizing privacy. But, you know, for the people who do get it, you know, you get it. And we can talk about the adversaries all day long, of which there are many.
Absolutely. So for those people who do get it, I know you can't give me a specific percentage, but how many do you think of those people who finally understand the bigger picture have been victimized in any of the ways you just described? Cybercrime, God forbid, swatting, that's the worst of the worst. But have they been, affected in a negative way before they get it?
Yeah, that's a good question. Many of us, I'd say most of us have been a victim of some kind of cybercrime, whether that is us being a little bit too generous with giving out our email to all these services, which will inevitably get breached, right? They call it getting breached. They will inevitably get breached. And we have criminals who wake up all around the world every day, and they wake up trying to get us to click on an email, to fill out a form that looks like our bank website, and take the money. So there are a good percentage of people who are victims of cybercrime every year, especially in the United States. Swatting, fortunately, is a tiny percent of people, but we have doxing, which is just people publicly sharing other people's information. That is a little bit more common, but still not a huge threat. For me, the biggest threat that anybody has is, all the information that your government has on you. Governments are not our friends. They are the governments in just the 20th century killed 250 million people. That is from R.J. Rummel, Death by Government. And so there's all kinds of reasons why you would want to protect yourself, your information from your own government. And people who live in explicitly totalitarian countries understand that pretty quickly. But, Dr. George, we have so many online profiles and online services, and we're revealing so much information that at this point, there are so many breaches. There are so many breaches that we aren't even aware of because they have not made it public yet, because it takes sometimes years before these become available. So there's just so many tendrils out there, which is why my basic philosophy about privacy is to learn to be a minimalist, to control your information, and just start to reduce the amount of threats that you have overall.
So that leads to the question of how do you, or can you, pull your, because we're not children anymore, we have a history. Are we able to pull some of our information back? Are we able to take control and decrease our footprint?
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. Some people take the defeatist attitude and they'll say, they already know everything. Okay, well, who is they? Because they is not just one person, first of all. They is many people. And so maybe by slowing down now, by starting your privacy journey now, you are not exposing it to this third company and this fourth company and this fifth entity. So I do not take the defeatist attitude at all. We are always capable of making ourselves out of what we've been made into. And there are things that can be deleted. There are things that can be changed. And there are future adversaries who we can protect ourselves from. So yes, absolutely, there are things you can do, which is what I talk about on my show and my book. And of course, the first thing to do is to start being aware of the problem and stop giving out information and just being aware of all the times you do give out your information. And that's the first step, of course.
And once you, if you have given information to these sites and you delete it or you close your account, let's say for those folks. So I guess they won't if they love Xbox Live and those sorts of things. But if you delete them, does that mean that they've deleted your information, or that just means you're no longer active, but it's out there, it's not being pulled back?
Yeah. So in the case of something like Xbox Live, like, I'm not telling people don't connect with your friends online. What I am saying is, like, if I were on Xbox Live, I'd just be careful, of course, what I'm, you know, telling people, who I am, where I live, et cetera. So I'm not telling people to go off the grid or anything. It's more, my example with Microsoft was just to say that there are so many companies who are surveying us, because we're essentially renters these days, right? We don't own our media. We don't own, most people don't own the computer programs they use. And if you don't own things, then you're a renter, you're paying a subscription, you're being surveyed. And depending how much these companies want to play politics, or it's, or whatever they want to do, they can kick you out. And of course, they can always, you know, that information can always end up in the hands of hackers or the government, should they be subpoenaed for whatever reason. So that was kind of just my thing about being cognizant of using Microsoft products. Lost my train of thought. What was the question, Dr. George?
That's quite all right. I mean, let's say you have an account with Microsoft, the 360, which is, I remember when it first started, you bought your disk and you owned it. And this, now you have to pay a subscription fee like you just described. But if you close that account, for example, and you say, I don't want it anymore, does that information that you've given them to have that account go away? Do they erase it? Or does it just still there, but it's not active and it can be come back boomerang to bite you?
Right. So when you request a big tech company to remove your stuff, that doesn't necessarily mean it's removed. Sometimes they just put it in a different section of their, you know, their databases. So unfortunately, no. So what I tend to recommend people is, of course, just be better next time, right? That's the obvious answer. You can sometimes go in, and if you're really done with an account, like really done, and there's reasons to hold on to old accounts because you might want them later. You might like an aged account that has a history. There are reasons to hold on to accounts. But if you really wanted to get off of, let's say you were totally done with Facebook, you backed up all of your data and your photos and everything, because you will regret that if you don't have that information later down the road. Then one thing you can do is you can start filling things out with bogus information. That's sometimes what I recommend, where that can start being updated in the servers. So you can fill it out with bogus information, and then you can go and delete the account, and you'll have to go through the steps, and they'll say, yeah, you know, it's going to take us a month to delete this just in case you change your mind. But even when that happens, you're right. They do have copies of this typically of your information still, but that might be less likely to be exposed in the case of a data breach or something like that. And of course, at least it's not public, right? Because anything on Facebook and Instagram, that's public information. And you actually have professional people these days who snoop on that stuff, called open source intelligence gathering. So you have people that are snooping on that kind of information for whatever particular reason, right? Maybe you're going through a divorce, and your husband or wife is hiring somebody to try to, you know, find out if you're smoking weed or something, or, you know, whatever little thing could get them the upper hand in the divorce proceedings. There's all kinds of reasons why you might want to just not have things public. And of course, deleting your Facebook account at least will make sure that it's not public any longer.
Wow. It's so much to think about. On that note, let's take our first break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Custodiat, and he is an author, and he has a website. Ultimately, you just described something that's kind of frightening, quite frankly, because we, for years, since we were, as much as we can speak, have been online and have been, I think, lulled into thinking that what we put on our computer, nobody else can see, or whomever we're speaking with, that's only our conversation. So it leads the question. You talked about online. What about texting? I mean, that to me is the same. Is it, well, let me ask, is it the same degree of giving up your information and having it be swept and surveilled and all the other things?
Yeah. So one of the great aspects of looking into privacy, starting your journey, is that you just start to learn more about the world. And you start to learn more about the systems that you use and you rely on. And that's itself a very useful intellectual exercise. So in the case of texting, SMS messaging, this is a this is a fairly private thing, right? So here's where we have to kind of dig into some of the details. So you send your text message to your friend, and that is going to them, and there's nobody else really who's seeing that. Now, we know that in order to use that, what's happening? Well, that message is being sent from your phone. It's going through the ether, right? It's going to a local cell tower, and then that cell tower is broadcasting it to your friend. So that's the process. Now, there's no average Joe who can intercept that, right? If you were to intercept that, it's possible, but it would require some advanced technology. We know the government has machines called Stingrays, where they can actually act like a cell tower, and yes, they can collect that that data. But your average person can't really do that. And if your average person was doing that, they would have to correlate that with your phone, which requires some extra steps. So sending a text message is fairly private. Your phone service provider is logging that. They do have the ability to look at the messages that you do send. And of course, if they are looking at that, then a government who subpoenas them could also look at that. So that's kind of how that system breaks down. Not everybody can look at it. Like your Facebook profile, many people can look at that, right? Especially if it's you have a lot of the public settings. So it's different in that regard. But for me, I don't want the phone service provider knowing what I'm saying. And I don't want the government to be able to know what I'm saying. And maybe, you know, some other nefarious actors in between. So that's why for me, I don't do text messaging. I do private messengers, which are just as easy. It does require your friend to have that private messenger also, but I download something like Signal, which is a good private messenger, Signal private messenger. And then I tell my friends and family, I'm not going to communicate with you unless you download Signal. And you know, I can give them the spiel about privacy as well, but that's kind of my expectation. So if you do that, you're in much better shape using an end-to-end encrypted private messenger like Signal. You don't have that problem anymore.
Okay. And for the platforms, you know, I used to use your typical, Firefox and that stuff. And I stopped because I heard that the platforms weren't necessarily private. Is that the case? Is there one platform, if you have to use the internet, that's better than another? Like there's Brave and there's DuckDuckGo, which I think is now owned by, is not private anymore. But is there one that, does it matter? And is that a step up on the safety ladder?
Yeah. So when it comes to internet browsers, this is obviously something we interact with a lot. The two main options are really, you either have Google Chrome or Mozilla Firefox. You know, Apple has their own browser. In general, there is only small bits of information that can be collected about your activity from your browser. So that's good news, right? I tend to use Firefox because they are collecting even less data than Google Chrome is. So I tell people to get into Firefox. And there's an even better version of Firefox. It's called LibreWolf. And this is just a modified version of Firefox, which cuts down even some of that data collection even further. So no, Firefox is not seeing that you are, you know, logging into your bank and they see your login and all this stuff. That's not exactly how browsers work. They can only collect minimal stuff about you. So I wouldn't be too concerned in that regard. You can really kind of go down the insane, you know, black pill kind of route if you overthink this stuff too much. It's a good exercise. I would say if you're worried about a browser, use Firefox or use LibreWolf. And it's more important, I would say, the things that you do within the browser, right? Your operational security, are you using good, strong passwords? Are you using two-factor authentication? These sorts of things would be the bigger concern, I would say, with your internet browsing privacy.
Got you. And the people have been trying to, turn people onto VPNs as well. I just saw a commercial for that. Is there any benefit to using something like a VPN, a virtual private network?
Yeah, so if we step back here again and kind of look at the big system here. So what is the internet? The internet is simply every computer in the world is connected now. We're connected, and sometimes it's with wires, and sometimes it is by Wi-Fi, right? By wireless signals. But in the end, it's the internet is simply the interconnectedness of every computer on Earth. Now, if it's interconnected, then you ask, okay, so who is the middleman? Who is the person who is at the end or in between these connections? for most people, that's your internet service provider, just like the phones we were talking about a minute ago. So your ISP, your internet service provider, does have the ability to see the websites that you visit. Now, if you're using a HTTPS website, which is most of them these days, then they can't see the things that you're doing within the website, but they can see that you visited, you know, whatever, this gun shop or, you know, whatever other website. They see that you visited Google. That doesn't tell them much. They see that you visited, you know, you can see how that could be exposing though in certain cases. So what a VPN does, a virtual private network, is it's a piece of software and you should pay for it because the ones that you pay for are the only ones worth using. If you are, if you're not paying for it, you're the product, right? That's what we say. And so what the virtual private network does, the VPN, is it basically encrypts all of your internet traffic. So your internet service provider now cannot even see that you visited that gun website. They just see an encrypted blob of nothingness, okay? And so that is good. That is a part of the online privacy route. I would just say that you want to make sure to select a trusted VPN because your VPN now is theoretically able to view your internet activity. Now, the best ones don't, right? They have a no logging policy, which means that they cannot do it, but you want to make sure that you choose one that has been audited to prove that that's the case and that is otherwise outspoken about privacy and trustworthy. It is a little bit of trust involved in a VPN. The ones that I tend to recommend are iVPN and Mulvad. I'm not sponsored. I don't do sponsorships of any kind. These are just the two that I tend to recommend as a trustworthy VPNs. VPN, absolutely. I always use a VPN. It's only one piece of the puzzle, though.
Got you. Before, as you were speaking, you were talking about we're wired or we're wireless. And so I have a question now about this contactless data that we're giving people using their, and I have to ask you this because I heard this on the news a couple of days ago, how it was safer to use the tapping of your card instead of inserting it into it and giving your, you know, your code. Is that true or is that complete marketing? It didn't make sense to me, but I would love to know your opinion on that.
Yeah, I think probably what they meant there, Dr. George, is that when you swipe something or when you're physically swiping something, there's a small chance that there could be somebody who's skimming that, right? So, you know, we've heard the stories about somebody who puts a fake credit card processor in the gas station and, you know, it's on top of the credit card thing. And so you put your card in and you're actually running it through their systems. So when you physically swipe something, there's a small chance that there could be some nefarious thing that's actually recording the magnetic strip in your credit card. And when you are tapping, which contactless, right, that is no longer a concern. Now, sure, there could be other concerns with a contactless payment, depending on what wallet you're using, all this kind of stuff. But in general, I do tend to agree that the contactless stuff, like your Apple Pay, is more secure than swiping a physical card.
Okay, well, I learned something. And for carrying your card, I mean, should you use the RFID blocking wallets and those sorts of things to protect anything that might grab your data?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's another rabbit hole. The short answer is I wouldn't be too concerned about that. I haven't really heard of many cases where that's very much an issue where somebody is sniffing around that has a machine that's capable of sniffing around and grabbing information from your card. Now, I'm the crazy privacy guy, so obviously I bought the $50 wallet with the RFID blocking and all that kind of stuff, but I wouldn't consider that by the way, there's a company called Silent Pocket who I've interviewed and they have that kind of stuff. And it's interesting episode anyway, if you want to listen to it. But no, I wouldn't consider that a huge problem, though it might become in the future.
Okay, that's good to know. So the next thing that I have a question, I think it's all leading in the same thing when you're out shopping and you're dining, they have all of these QR codes, which I stay away from. I want a menu. I want a hard copy of something. Is that a way to gather or does it breach your privacy? I guess that's my first question.
Yeah, it's a good question. And here I'll admit something to the audience, Dr. George, which is that sometimes I don't do all of my due diligence on every technology simply because I just avoid things. Just I don't even like the idea, so I never even, you know, use things. In the case of QR codes, there is some data being transferred in that. And so I don't know all the details of what's the worst that can happen with a QR code scan. But for me, like I said, I don't even carry a phone with me. So I'm definitely not, you know, going to use QR codes. And by the way, for, you know, I see a lot of restaurants where they don't even have physical menus anymore. It's really offensive in my opinion. So I just demand a physical menu. And, you know, during the COVID days, they would say, well, we don't have physical menus. I would, you know, you can say, I don't have a phone. They won't believe that because who doesn't have a phone? You know, some people have done things like they'll carry a fake phone with them and you can get like a sticker that has a cracked screen on it. So you just show them, oh, my phone's cracked. Magically, Dr. George, sometimes they actually have physical menus when you pull that card. It's amazing how physical menus actually are there when you have a broken phone. So yeah, I don't know the details, but I just avoid it at all costs.
Got you. Well, I have to say at one point I asked them to read me, tell me what's on the menu. I think I did that. And then they got one kind of quick for that one too. But it seems that if there's convenience associated with something, you really have to take a step back and pump the brakes and think about what you're doing. Just because it's easy, does it make it good? Right? And in terms of anything, but this is so pervasive. Everything's made to be like they want you to think, right? I should say, there's only one way to do it and there's only one choice and this is the best way. But like you said, we're all connected. And we talked about individual privacy. What about financial privacy and financial health? I actually just saw a movie where somebody clicked on a link and they were able to empty her entire bank account just by her giving that information. Now, from what you described, that doesn't sound like it's a plot that's not implausible.
Yeah, for sure. So I created a course about a year ago called Hack Proof. And so this is when I really looked into a lot of the stuff. And, you know, there are people that wake up every day in parts of the world where they don't have a moral consciousness, to be perfectly honest. And they wake up and they spend 12 hours a day trying to find ways to get that grandma in Iowa to take her money, right? That's what these people wake up and do. And they're really good at their job. And they are fantastic at psychological exploitation. They're sophisticated. They'll call you. They'll make up stories about how your son is in the hospital. They'll do anything and everything. And one thing that they will do is if you are reckless about using your email address online, which is, you know, one reason why I'm careful about privacy because it doubles as security at the end of the day. So you are reckless about using your single email address online. You're not using something like, you know, temporary email addresses and this kind of thing. And this gets hacked or breached eventually or dozens of times, right? And this goes on to the dark web and people find these email addresses and they just send out emails to people. And it says, hey, you know, maybe they have another piece of information. They know that you bank with Wells Fargo. Okay. Well, so they're going to send you an email that looks like it's from Wells Fargo. And they're going to say, hey, they're going to cause an alert, right? They're going to say, hey, did you authorize this transaction? And you're going to say, no, I didn't. And what's happening? Am I getting hacked? And then they're going to say, if you didn't authorize this transaction, well, click here. And so you're going to click there and you're going to be sent to a fake website that looks like Wells Fargo, and you're going to type in your email address and your password, and surprise, surprise, that's all it takes to get into an account, right? And at that point, they can do some nefarious stuff. And so I tell people, there's a lot of steps in this process. Be careful about just giving away your email address recklessly. Treat all emails as static messages, static images. Do not respond to any action within an email from within that email, right? Go and verify the source outside of that email. So don't click on anything. Just treat them as static images and just be alert and start to be aware of what some of these scams are. Because as I said, $10 trillion cybercrime industry. There's a lot of effort that goes into this. They're very good. You have to be psychologically strong and you can help yourself by using temporary email services and just by having fewer things out there that can come back to hurt you.
Excellent advice. Let's take our second break on that note. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. And you can find Mr. Custodiat's books on Amazon. Is your most recent one, The Watchman Guide to Privacy, Reclaim Your Digital, Financial, and Lifestyle Freedom?
Yeah, so that's my only published book at the moment. I have another one coming out. But yeah, that will kind of give you a fantastic overview of all the stuff we're talking about. And you can kind of find out more about me from there. But yeah, that's an excellent resource to start.
Excellent. Now, for you just described, we're taking this in pieces, from phones to the computer. What about travel? I mean, there's a lot of people now working from home after COVID, and everything seems to be computer-based. Do you find that those folks, without the typical working environment where you're dealing with people face-to-face, that they're more open to having their company hacked or things that are more just outside of you but can involve your entire corporate structure?
So are you saying that if you're working from home, are you more likely to be susceptible to cybercrime? Is that what you're
yes.
thinking?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, there was all kinds of, I'll tell you what, these $10 trillion cybercrime people, when they realized that everybody was going to start logging in from their own accounts and their own home networks, they got really happy, right? Because that's just many more loose ends. Of course, what companies will do is they have their own kind of intranet, right? They have their own VPNs and firewalls and all the stuff that you go to them, and they have people that they hire to kind of protect you in various ways. And now that you have Kathy, who is, you know, running the website and she's logging into that account from her own personal computer at home, there are certainly more vulnerabilities. So, you know, I think just all the usual tactics would apply. The kind of cybersecurity tactics in that case. A great thing we haven't talked about yet is two-factor authentication. Basically, that means that if you log in, you have your username and your password. And you know, once you do that, we see this all the time. It says, okay, we're going to send a verification to your email, to your phone. My favorite preferred method is a code, like you have an independent app which generates random codes that you connect. First of all, you connect it with the service. Let me give a better example. Let's say you have, I don't think a lot of banks do this for some reason, but let's say you have a Bank of America account and you type in your password and you type in your username. And then it says, okay, we need a two-factor. We need another thing to prove that you are the person. And so you would go to your app on your phone. And one that I think is easy is called Authy. And they would generate a 6-digit code. And then you would have to give that 6-digit code to Bank of America before you can log in. So it's just another step, and it's one that is independent of Bank of America, so it cannot be compromised. And it's just a little bit of extra security. That by itself would solve a lot of cybersecurity issues if people enable two-factor authentication in all of their accounts. Now, stepping back to your example, yes, I do think people who are working from home are more susceptible, just for the reason that you now have people with admin access and all kinds of accesses that are not under the protection of your IT team, that are outside of the firewall of your company, and that have all kinds of access to accounts that they need to have that are just sitting there on their personal computer, which itself doesn't always have the best security.
So that being said, the people who are clicking on these links to watch videos and TikToks and all these other things, does that open a door to breaching security if you put that on your desktop or your computer that you have a business VPN or whatever on?
I wouldn't be as concerned about that these days. You know, we used to all have antivirus software on our computers. I've noticed people don't really talk about that anymore. And that's because there are better ways to take people's money. And what I mentioned about the email phishing attacks, that's a much better way. Or just attacking the company directly, that's a really good way. Or, you know, a scam phone calls, things of this sort. So there's not as much effort being funneled into the malware on your computer that would, you know, take access, that would, you know, you would suddenly lose control of your mouse and your mouse clicks here and there and you realize somebody has hacked your computer. That stuff doesn't happen too much anymore. I would be more concerned, somebody working from home, are they You know, are they clicking on that email link? And is it taking to them to a nefarious website? Maybe it could be the case they do download something from, it would have to be from a shady website, right? TikTok's not going to do that for you. But they end up in a shady website and it does download something on their computer that is starting to log their keystrokes. So if you can log your keystrokes, you can see what passwords people type in and things of this sort. More susceptible if you use Windows. I tell people get off of Windows as much as you can. At least move to Mac. For me, of course, I go to Linux, which is the alternative operating system. A lot more secure than Windows. But Windows is really the huge vulnerability in all of this. So if people just got off of Windows, I think that would also solve a lot of issues.
That's a good point. So from the standpoint of these websites that you, I mean, well, let's back up. I've had friends, for example, who they get this, it freezes. And then there's this number that you call and you end up talking to somebody and you have to pay money. It's basically holding your computer hostage. That still goes on, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's a particularly nasty cyber attack called ransomware. And you'll read about this in stories sometimes, you know, like a power company had a ransomware attack. So basically what it boils down to is somebody messed up, right? Somebody clicked on something they shouldn't. Somebody clicked on that email. Somebody downloaded that thing from that shady website that they shouldn't have. And that installed something, probably using Windows. I guarantee it's most likely using Windows, Dr. George. Mm-hmm. And depending what operating system you're using, depending what you clicked, it could install something that kind of freezes your computer, as you say, encrypts your data and says, you have to pay us this amount of Bitcoin in 2 days, or we're going to delete all of your stuff. So yeah, that is the thing. I think that is more common with companies, but it can happen to individuals. And so again, have good awareness of what you're clicking and where you're visiting, get off of Windows. And yeah, I think just those kind of two things are the best place to start.
Got you. So from the standpoint of, you know, living making decisions that put you in a better state. I mean, obviously you've gone to a higher degree than most folks, but what should people have, get rid of their phones and go back to landlines as much as possible, and then just use their phones like we used to have it for emergencies if you're traveling or something, but it's not your everyday, because people have gotten rid of their landlines, for example, because of convenience. But is that something that you should go back to? Go back to old school?
Well, that's my approach. And that's more me kind of experimenting as I do and just having a fun time of it. And I will say that one thing I've noticed is these things don't make us as productive as we think. So I'm on Twitter and I like to say a lot of funny things. Like, for example, the other day I tweeted, it's amazing how many more steps I take without a fitness tracker. And so I like to make all these kind of anti-progress, neo-Luddite, minimalist kind of things. And I think it's true. I think it's absolutely true. I would not be concerned about somebody using an iPhone that they're going to have some kind of security breach. An iPhone is a very secure device. Privacy questions because you're trusting Apple. But if you're using an iPhone and you're using apps that are sandboxed, which means that they have less of a chance of somebody taking over your phone as you would a computer, then you're in a pretty good state. Now, if you're using an Android phone, I would probably encourage you to move to iPhone or kind of up your knowledge of cybersecurity. But yeah, I would encourage you probably to get off of an Android phone and onto an iPhone. And if you do that, you don't have to give up your phone. Like, you don't have to be the weirdo like I am, trying to push the boundaries. I think the computer is more the domain where people mess up in terms of cybersecurity. I don't use a phone because there are tracking elements inside a phone that do not exist inside of a computer that reveal your real location. And that is why I don't use a phone, because that's valuable information that I don't want anybody to know.
Is there any way to deactivate that? If it's in airplane mode, does it still bypass that so that you won't be tracked?
Yeah, so a phone has a GPS chip in there, right? It also has a chip that connects with cell phone towers. Now, you say airplane mode. Here's an interesting thing. you can make an emergency, you know, that emergency call that you can make, you can still make that when airplane mode is on. So what does that tell you? That tells you that your phone is always has the ability to ping off of your cell phone tower. That is triangulation. That is locating you within like a 10-foot area. And depending on other pieces of information you've given out, that can reveal you. Now, who does that reveal you to? You know, people you're probably not concerned with, right? Your phone company, you know, maybe a subpoena and the government has that information. I just go the extra mile because I'm a weirdo.
Well, I really didn't know that. I thought once that airplane mode was on, nothing, there's no antennas working. But if there's a chip, that totally, I get it. It would bypass everything. From the standpoint, and I don't know if you can answer this question, but is moving to these different levels of 4G, 5G, soon to be 6G, is that more, how can I put it, a sophisticated surveillance system?
Yeah, so but basically what they're doing with the 4G to the 5G, et cetera, they're just increasing the ability to transmit data. So it's not that it's you know, it is inherently more surveillance, et cetera, but it does open it up for more surveillance to take place. So, you know, when you have 5G towers that can send a lot more information, well, suddenly you can do more things. You can have more surveillance cameras that are sending information back and forth more freely. Maybe they're higher definition so that they can zoom in and see faces more clearly. So it's all the stuff that you can do when you have more data at your disposal. That's the main thing I'd be worried about with 5G and 4G. And again, going back to my minimalist kind of anti-technology roots, I don't see any need for 5G. I think that phones are designed to make emergency calls when we're away from home. I don't have no reason to be watching YouTube when I'm, you know, in the middle of nowhere, in between two places. I just think that's not progress. That is regress in many ways. But yeah, I don't think 5G inherently is more surveying. It just opens up the door for more cameras on the street corner that are communicating more quickly, have a clearer image, this kind of stuff. That's what I would be concerned about.
That's a good point. So on that note, let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. How can people listen to your podcast? Where are they and when do they run?
Yeah, so I love podcasts. I like downloading something and then just listening to it wherever I want to, whenever I want. I'm on most of the podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. That is from statistics where 90% of people listen to their podcasts. So I'm on those. I'm on most of your independent podcasts as well. I'm also on YouTube, Rumble, Odyssey, BitChute, some of these alternative platforms, because I talk about naughty things, right? Privacy and freedom. And I know that they will shadow ban me and try to, you know, crack down on the stuff I say. So I'm on most of the platforms that people would be either watching videos or listening to audio.
Well, more power to you, because what you do is giving people knowledge. And I, you know, I'm a big proponent of, you don't know, if you don't know what you don't know, you cannot make decisions that are going to benefit you. And from the standpoint, and again, we're talking about the society as a whole, but is it a generational thing where people who are older, who live before all of these supposed conveniences, are, they're not the target necessarily. It's the people who are never knew what came before, the children, the generation now that it's all living your life online. Everything has got to be a picture or tag or these sorts of things. Is that the future from the standpoint of what they want? You know, powers that are trying to surveil, it gets easier as you get younger, doesn't it?
I think so. I don't think it has to be, but I think that is definitely the trend. And, you know, these people, they just see all their friends using it and that's the place to be. And they want to be playing Fortnite or whatever the new game is. And they want to be on TikTok or, you know, I talk to some young people, oh, I would never use Instagram or TikTok, right? They're already onto the next thing, right? That's certainly alluring for children. And I think there are some, you know, the people who design these applications are, they have teams of experts who teach you how to be psychologically exploitative. Okay, here's the color you need to use. Make sure you have this little icon on the top so people get excited when they get a new message. All these kind of things are designed. You know, the slow loading between when you start your email app and when it loads, that's not necessary. That's designed just to kind of build anticipation. So all these things, yeah, they're designed to be exploitative. And that's why I kind of just take the hard line approach. And, you know, I kind of remove a lot of this stuff from my life, or I only introduce it when I'm testing it so I can help other people. The truth is, I was never more social than when I gave up social media. And I was never more informed of the media than when I gave up social media. So we don't have to be doing these things. We don't have to have our kids on them. And yeah, I think we can certainly live without this stuff.
Now, I know that you, well, correct me if I'm wrong, but you have a service, right, where people can, I assume, hire you to help them navigate this system in a safe way to help them not be a victim. Is that correct?
So I do consulting, and I do have some courses. I typically recommend people, you know, check out my website, watchmanprivacy.com, listen to my podcast, maybe some of the early episodes. Definitely everybody can pick up the book. That's a really useful tool. And then if that does not answer your question, then sure, see what else I have to offer. But a lot of times you just need the introduction that I offer in some of the free or cheap stuff like the book.
Got you. So, you know, in the mindset of privacy, you mentioned you want to teach people how to change their energy on this. What is the, and then again, it's a kind of an esoteric question. Is it because people want to take their power back that they join, or is it fear of something happening to them? It's just a slightly different energy. You know, I think it should be positive. You're doing it for living your life and being an individual and being your authentic self, as opposed to all of these constraints that we find ourselves in and not having anybody control me. Is what's the main thing, if you can answer that question, that drive people to your service or to buy your book? I know you, some people who get it, I get that. But is it because, what's the driving factor? I'm just curious.
It's a good question. I think a lot of people are skeptical of the powers that be these days, whether that's the government or whoever that may be. So a lot of people are concerned about that. Other people, though, as you say, are just trying to get a little bit of their humanity back. I just had an episode on my show called Escaping the Culture Industry, where I break down how the stuff that is foisted upon us, and Dr. George, people are spending 10 hours a day on devices in the US. That's almost half of your year is spent looking at a device, right? That's crazy statistics. We know that this is not good for us. We know that this is not healthy. We know that we're sacrificing part of our individuality, looking at this stuff that's designed to exploit us. And I think people do want to escape that. They want to get more in touch with their humanity, with minimalism. And that is also what I talk about. I talk about the tools to protect people from the powers that be, also to recapture their humanity. So it tends to be a little bit of both. And I find that the common denominator is people have a sense that they're giving out stuff to people who they should not be giving it out to for whatever reason. And they have this possessiveness, this desire to develop their self and not contaminate their self. And at the end of the day, that's kind of what it all boils down to.
I love that. And so with this new AI meme that's happening when ChatGPT, and I think from a marketing standpoint, and it's happening in medicine as well, that if it's artificial intelligence, it's better than humans. It's better than being a doctor. It's more efficient. It's more artistic. It's more everything than human. Is that, well, I think it's a marketing ploy, but is that also helping people to, for those who don't get it, to let their guard down? It's not a human, it's just AI. So, you know, it's not going to affect me. It's not going to hurt me. Do you think that's part of the marketing to for those who don't get it, to be even more forthcoming with stuff that they shouldn't be?
You know, it's funny. We have all of these dystopian stories and films, whether that's The Matrix, iRobot, The Terminator, Blade Runner, you might say, where AI goes out of control and it harms humanity in a certain way. And we've all watched these. We all tend to agree with the message. And then in the last year, people are just oh yeah, give me more AI. This is awesome. Look how much like I automated this little irrelevant part of my life. So I find that hilarious. I find that ironic. I guess the marketing has been on point. But yeah, I don't care for this stuff. I don't want to be a part of it. I don't want to feed the beast. The AI that currently exists is not doing its own thinking. It's basically just reprocessing things that it has, you know, digested. You know, the ChatGPT has just read a whole lot of things. And so it kind of knows how to combine things that already exist. So my understanding is that this is not producing intelligence. It's not real intelligence. But I do think that people are playing with fire and they should be very careful about doing so for all the reasons we have been skeptical of AI up to this point. I mean, it seems silly to me. I wish people would just think about it a little bit more. Now, I do understand people don't want to get left behind. And if it can help your business out, they want to use it. I understand that. Just be a little bit thoughtful about proceeding.
A lot thoughtful. I mean, every single futuristic movie, it's always dystopian. Have you ever, just curious, have you ever seen one where the future is awesome and everybody's sweetness and light? I don't think I've ever seen one.
No, absolutely not. And that's partly as some of my more optimistic friends would say, you know, we have a downer mentality as humans, especially when we pick up the pen to write science fiction. Okay, there's some of that, but absolutely, it's easy to see how technology can take over us. It's very easy because it's a powerful thing, and we are very weak people, in a certain sense, psychologically and biologically. And yeah, we need to be very thoughtful about opening Pandora's box.
I couldn't have said it better. I mean, we talk about AI as if it's some flawless, you know, technology. It's created by man, who's flawed, and given free rein, what could go wrong?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we've read all the stories. We've watched Skynet in many manifestations over the many useless sequels to Terminator, and you know, we know all the directions it can go. So, I don't think that we need to improve humanity. I think that we are perfect in and of ourselves. And, you know, we can augment certain things, you know, technologies that help people who can't see to see. Okay, fine. But proceed at your own risk.
I think that's a wonderful place to stop, because you've just, you know, given us a call to action. In the minute that we have left, once again, how can people listen to your podcast, buy your books, and when is your next one coming out?
Yeah, so I just direct people to one website, watchmanprivacy.com. When you get there, you'll see the book. That's the first thing you see. That should be on everybody's bookshelf. I think it's a very useful resource to regain your life and protect yourself and all the good things we talked about. And from there, you can start following my podcast. We have links to all that. So that's kind of where I would send people. I have recently been working on things like Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. So I have a book coming out on that. But you'll know if that's for you by listening to my podcast and kind of listening to the recent episodes. So yeah, just start with the website, start with the book. And, you know, I like giving out free stuff. And if people like what I have to offer, then they can get more. That's kind of my mentality.
I love it. Mr. Custodia, thank you so much for joining me. It was an absolute pleasure speaking with you.
The pleasure's all mine. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk Events.